Good morning. So I'm here today in the studio with fellow mole, Lakota Cheyenne activist Robin White, and we're speaking this morning by phone, we hope at least, with Yankton Sioux tribal members Holly St. Pierre, who's in Kalama, Washington, and who's already on the line. And we're reaching out still to try to get Shelley Sanssouci in South Dakota, also on the line, and we're speaking about the months-long flooding on the Yankton Sioux Reservation in South Dakota. Holly St. Pierre is an activist and trauma counselor, and Shelley Sanssouci is vice president of, or vice chair of, the White Swan community, which is heavily impacted by the flooding. She is also director of tribal employment, of the Tribal Employment Rights Office. So I just want to, first of all, refer our listeners to some of the excellent reporting that DNA Yankton journalist Jacqueline Keeler has done on the flooding, and note that Shelley Sanssouci was also interviewed on October 10th by Jacqueline Keeler and Paul Rowland on Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. So we're going to be posting links to those stories when we post this segment online later on in the week. So the extreme flooding really began with a bomb cyclone in March and with unusually heavy rains that have continued, and which may represent the new normal under climate change. And so, Holly, I know that originally, we were kind of looking to Shelley, who's on the ground in South Dakota, to provide us with a little bit of context on the situation. But I'm wondering if you could maybe fill us in a little bit on what's been going on.
Yeah, I sure can. I do have several family members that live there and have been personally impacted by the flood. Father was born in that community. And so just, you know, keeping in contact, you know, really close contact with Shelley, like I have been. I know that one of the biggest problems is that the water quality, of course, has been impacted. There's been a lot of confusion. There hasn't been good communication about whether the water has been safe for drinking, you know, washing dishes, bathing, all of that. There has been E. coli detected in the water at one point. So they're living with that. You know, I guess probably the best kind of image I could give of it, it would be, you know, just to imagine living amongst, you know, feet of standing water, you know, for over 7 months. That's infected now by all kinds of bacteria. And, you know, also there is some effects of algae bloom. That's the runoff from neighboring farms. And so people, children, as well as, you know, their parents, have been affected by breathing problems. There have been a few families that have had to leave because the children have, you know, are on nebulizer treatments due to the standing water and the mold spores, you know, within their homes. They're also, you know, with winter coming on, many of them are unable to turn on their furnaces because they have been warned about mold spores in the furnaces. And so we've been trying to get heaters out there and blankets. Since they don't have a central heating supply at this point, many of them. You know, there's a main road, the main highway that they use in and out of town to get to services, to get to school, to get into medical treatment because several members are on dialysis, several residents, has been flooded out essentially since March. It's my understanding that the governor did pay quite a bit of money to have that highway raised 4 feet. However, in September, they experienced another quite big rainstorm. It was 11 inches in 24 hours, which flooded out the road, the main road again. And so they're all using a somewhat unsafe, very rutted dirt road to try to get into the services and get around. So that's they're blocked quite a bit from transportation. Even delivery trucks that have been bringing in supplies are now sometimes refusing to use that road to get in. So that's going on. We had a scare yesterday because the community center where Shelley and several volunteers are helping to feed the community every day, we were thinking that was now flooding. That community center is vital right now to keeping people's spirits up, you know, helping them have a place to go, can eat, because many of their homes smell like sewage. They don't want to eat in their homes, you know, understandably. And so, but we did find out that that was thankfully kind of a false alarm. There was a rain gutter that was broken and was, they found out, was pouring into the community center. And so they got that fixed. And it's my understanding everything's, you know, cool now, so that we were breathing a big sigh of relief last night when we found that out, because, you know, it's where people are gathering. You know, they can go and receive support from one another, you know, pick up emergency supplies. So, I mean, that's kind of the main issues that a lot of the residents are experiencing at this point. And I guess just to give some really important background history, the White Swan community is currently located in Lake Andes on the reservation. However, they were not always located at this current place. They were, and the place where my father was born was much closer down, closer to the Missouri River. However, that area is now flooded due to the building of several dam projects, the Fort Randall Dam. And so at that time in the early 50s, the Army Corps of Engineers came in and condemned the land to take it for purposes of building the Fort Randall Dam and several other dams. My great-grandmother and many other families at that time lost their land and were forced to relocate at that time with very little help. Just kind of had to disperse to wherever they could find places to go. And so now they're currently, the White Swan community is currently located at Lake Andes and, you know, being flooded out and being generally ignored by the governor. And if they don't receive relief, you know, within a somewhat short period of time, they will be forced to relocate once again and just kind of perpetuate, you know, the sad history that has been the history of Natives, you know, throughout the foundation of this country.
And that scenario is a fairly familiar one to people in this region, because it kind of mirrors the situation with the Dalles Dam in Oregon. And in both cases, you know, promises of replacement housing were never fulfilled. And also interesting to note that the Fort Randall Dam is part of a kind of complex of hydroelectric powers, power plants, five of them in total, but it's one of the largest. And, you know, a 1999 court document indicated that at that point, the dam was generating more than $1.5 billion a year in hydropower for the federal government. And so, you know, the fact that that land has been such a lucrative source of, you know, money and hydropower, and yet none of that compensation is going to the tribal members, ought to give us all kind of pause. And I just want to interject here, too, that the tribe has been asking the governor to call out the National Guard, and the governor has so far been refusing.
Yeah. It's very curious because the National Guard is located, I believe it's about 20 miles away in Wagner. And the statement that was put out to the tribe was that, you know, they had many other resources that they could tap into, and that the National Guard was only to be used as a last resort. And I just, that's I don't know. I'm just incredulous at that because, I mean, if people are living with their homes smelling like sewage and no heater, I don't know how much more of a last resort there has to be. I don't know how much more dire the conditions have to be.
There was also a study done, I think, in the last few years of Rosebud Sioux Reservation and one other reservation in the state that indicated that life expectancy for people on those two reservations was 21 years shorter than other communities in the state. And so we're already looking at communities that have disproportionate, you know, health disparities and other health issues that are really laboring under this intensified burden.
Well, and, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with the ACEs study that was done by Kaiser in the 90s. It was a huge study about the impacts of childhood trauma on adult health, the health outcomes. And, you know, I mean, with the historical trauma that Native people have experienced, they do not, unfortunately, have projected good health outcomes because they have a variety of compound trauma that they have, you know, experienced. And so it's not surprising that their life expectancy is shorter. We also have the problem of suicide.
Right. And Holly, I don't want to cut things short, but we only have a few minutes left, and I want to make sure that our listeners know what they can do to help and what you're trying to do right now in order to aid these tribal members that are really, you know, in this quite horrible and avoidable situation.
Yeah, definitely. So we are in the process, I am in the process right now of setting up the structure of a 501c3 for longer term needs, for legal representation, for paving the main road, larger concerns like that. But we also do have, I believe there is a website that's set up. Robin White was going to speak about that a little bit. People can go on to the website and find, keep up to date, yeah, and find out how they can help, how they can contribute. There is also, there was a link provided on the
I can break in and give them, okay, that. We're gonna run out of time. So the website is actnative.wordpress.com. So actnative.wordpress.com. So that should be live. If not, it will be shortly. We are looking for a nonprofit to umbrella us until that 501c is functional. We're also looking at some people from across the country. We're looking at making a kind of a Native Red Cross or FEMA, if you will. There's, if you get on that website, we'll be able to direct you to places to take donations to. Please, all new donations, no used clothing. We'll have lists on there of where you can purchase this stuff. We're working on getting a bulk buying deals with sourcing this stuff out and give you a little bit better idea what the long-term stuff is in trying to help legally and also working on what needs to be done later. So emergency supplies right now, but later fixing the roads, fixing getting the dikes cleared out and the flood drainage done, and then fixing the houses as we're doing that. So it's complicated.
And we'll post that URL when we post the interview. I just also want to suggest that our listeners might want to call Governor Noem's office in South Dakota. The number there is 605-773-3212. And I want to thank our guest today. And we've unfortunately been unable to get Shelley Sanssouci on the phone, but we've been speaking with Holly St. Pierre, who's been our guest today. Thank you for speaking with us today, Holly.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. This has been Robin White and Desiree Helgers with the Old Mole Variety Hour.
Behind the world burn, seas rise and the clock turn, and the earth fighting back with hurricanes and the earthquakes and the pouring rain. This is for every life lost, for the legacy of standing rock, for the sacred land that we desecrate. The trauma my people so carry today, for the suicide of our youth, who so suffer from being colonized. Watch the bombs drop and the bullets fly. We steady ignoring the earth's cry. Past too many tipping points and there's not enough, running out of time. And the walls fall. How could you? be a witness to the end and not act. Can't you see the world is broken? Every person on the planet part of something bigger than us. We have all been chosen as a generation of humanity that determines what kind of world we will pass down to our children. I'm uncertain, how will you look your child in the eyes and tell them the future wasn't worth fighting for? Could have done more but didn't listen, didn't wake up, didn't speak up, didn't fight back when there was still time. Everything we love is what we must protect in the final moments while there's still time. And there is still time, I believe. There is still time.
This is KBOO Portland, and you're listening to the OMO Variety Hour. That song was called Broken by Shutezcat Martinez. Shutezcat is an indigenous environmental activist, hip-hop artist, and youth director of Earth Guardians, a worldwide conservation organization.